radio free. You see blue skies and think of sea. How are you doing? And later on, switch on the TV. They give me the news, they give half truths to me.
Good afternoon, ladies, gentlemen, children of all ages. Yes, we're on today in a very special program, and we're on the weekend before Thanksgiving. It's a very festive time of the year, and it's also a very sad time of the year as well. Today, we will be discussing the anniversary, I believe 53 years ago, the murder of John Fitzgerald Kennedy in Dallas, Texas. On that fateful day, we are going to bring up in just a moment our first guest, and then Art will come on sometime in the last hour to fill in the gaps as far as the Mafia is concerned, the Cosa Nostra and the Warren Commission, and all of the interesting trails that lead to a particular group of people and intel that will maybe just fill in the gaps for us. So I want to thank God, the Heavenly Father, for this opportunity, for me personally, to bring our audience more truth, more information, more revelations on the deception that took place some 50 years ago, five decades or more ago, and how this continues to this day, the deception, the lies, and yet the truth does eke out. And we thank him for that, and in God's holy name, Yeshua Messiah, amen. I want to bring up in the first hour one of our old friends and guests who has been with us on 9/11, Sandy Hook hoax, and the other Boston Marathon bombing hoax as well. And of course, he is none other than James Fetzer, Professor Emeritus at the University of Minnesota, I believe. And he's going to talk today with us about his findings and research as he's in Dallas right now, folks, to talk about the Zapruder film, the Abraham Zapruder film, and which version is the real, or are any of them real. So welcome to the program again, Jim.
Oh, thanks, Rick. Absolutely delighted to be here. Yes, I wound up chairing or co-chairing five national conferences, published three collections of expert studies on the assassination, bringing together the most highly qualified individuals on different aspects of the case. I have a new book in the offing that'll be out in about a month or so on moonrockbooks.com, but here I am in Dallas, where there's a wonderful conference organized by Judith Very Baker, who is, as Judith Very, Lee Oswald's girlfriend in Dallas, working with David Ferry under the supervision of Dr. Mary Sherman to produce a rapid-acting cancer that appears to have been used against Jack on Jack Ruby, among others.
Wow, fascinating stuff. So you're really, as I said, in the thick of all of this investigation, and you've been talking, I know, on a number of forums, and certainly up on YouTube, you've done some presentations, the JFK Zapruder hoax, part one through, I believe, part four at least, and you've also got some other additional videos on why it's important to know why the assassination is so important, and so we're going to get right into it right now. First of all, just from that one angle, the Abraham Zapruder 8mm film controversy, as you know, has been really a controversy since the beginning. Where did he happen to come from? Why was he there at the right moment? What did he capture on film? And how many different versions of the film have been posted and enhanced and changed and altered over these years, particularly in the last few years on the internet with high def quality and so forth. So why don't we begin at the beginning of your analysis of these frames and so forth?
We can do that, Rick, and then I can fall back and lay the background for the circumstances, sequence of events that led to the assassination itself. Sure. Abraham Zapruder was a dress manufacturer. He had a company called Jennifer Juniors that was located in the Daltex building, yes, adjacent to the Texas School Book Depository. He came over with a new camera, got up on a low colonnade there in the pergola area of Dealey Plaza with his secretary, whose name was Seitzman, and proceeded to film what has become the most famous piece of footage in the world has ever known. Zapruder explained he began filming when the motorcade came up Houston, was about to turn onto Elm, and didn't cease filming until it disappeared under the triple underpass. The film we have now is only 26 seconds long, and it has a major gap. For example, when the motorcade starts to turn from Houston onto Main, there's a big jump, and all of a sudden the presidential limo, which was out in front, part of the Secret Service setting him up for the hit, is in the vicinity of the Stemmons Freeway sign. He's actually already been hit twice. He's been hit in the back by a shot fired from the top of the county records building by a Dallas deputy sheriff by the name of Harry Weatherford. He was using a .30-06 to fire a Mannlicher Carcano bullet, which was of a smaller caliber, using a plastic collar called a sabot. This bullet hit JFK in the back about 5.5 or 6 inches below the collar, just to the right of the spinal column. Shallow shot, only went in about as far as the second knuckle of your little finger. You see Jack's already clutching his throat in the vicinity of the Stemmons sign. That's from the reaction from a shot fired through the windshield that appears to have originated from actually inside the triple underpass. There's an almost perfect location, which I scouted out recently, and we found that that shot traversed the windshield, hit him in the throat, and caused a puncture wound that would later be described at Parkland Hospital.
Yeah.
And for the physician who was in charge of performing a simple tracheostomy, three times to the press during the Parkland press conference, that the bullet had been coming at him, that it was a wound of entry and so forth. Mm-hmm. Now, this appears to have been shot by a fellow named Jack Lawrence, who was an Air Force expert, went to work for the car dealership that provided the vehicles, which in this case, Rick, were of all different makes, models, and colors, completely unlike a normal presidential motorcade, which would be all uniformly black Cadillac limousines as a rule. And then proceeding forward, among the oddities, there's a man with an umbrella that's pumping it up and down, evidently a sign to the shooters at various locations, and I've identified six. There may have been a seventh, to keep shooting because he's not dead yet. And a Castro Cuban reaches out with a fist-like gesture, evidently an indication to the driver, William Gray, should bring the limousine to a halt, which he proceeded to do. He pulled it to the left and to a halt, and there preceded a limousine stop for which we have over 60 witnesses, but where we now know what happened during the stop. Jack was hit twice in the head, once in the back of the head from the Daltex, a shot fired by an anti-Castro Cuban by the name of Nestor Tony Escadro, using a Mannlicher Carcano, and it's so unreliable that he had two misses. One hit a distant curbing and injured a bystander by the name of James Tagg. The other missed and hit the chrome strip over the limousine, presidential limousine. Jackie eased him back up and was looking at him right in the face when he was hit in approximately the right temple by a frangible or exploding bullet that set up shockwaves that blew his brains out the back of his already weakened cranium with such force that when they impacted with motorcycle patrolman Bobby Hargis riding there, he initially thought he had been shot. Now, what they did with the film is to merge those two shots. So they have just a bit of the motion forward from frame 312 to 313, then 313, 14, 15. You have this back and to the left violent motion. But he actually only slumped to the left, Rick. He just slumped to the left. They just took out so many frames that they created this violent back and to the left, which no one in Dealey Plaza witnessed.
Yeah, well, at the time, too, it seems as if Zapruder happened to have this the Zoomatic Director's Series Model 414PD top-of-the-line Bell & Howell 8mm camera. And the business of what happened when he took these clips and he filmed this the movement of the limousine, immediately what happened after that? Then he was apprehended, or he volunteered supposedly to go right into the police department and then handed in what he had.
Well, but there's more to the story, Rick, because what we know now is that Fred Newcomb, who was a first-generation student, had hired a fellow to do interviews with the four motorcycle patrolmen who were with a vehicle and with their supervisor, Stavis Ellis. And Larry Rivera, who's been doing simply sensational cutting-edge research, was able to transcribe the transcripts, which had basically the interviews, which had basically been lost to history. It was very difficult because they had heavy accents. These were Dallas cops, but he was successful. And what we discovered was that that all four of the motorcycle patrolmen confirmed the limo stop. Not only that, but Officer Hargis on the left actually dismounted his bike and ran between the Secret Service vehicle and the presidential toward the grassy knoll from which he believed that shot had originated. Officer Jackson on the right actually motors up onto the grassy knoll until his bike falls over, and then he gets off, continues on foot. Meanwhile, five agents dismount from the Secret Service limousine, surround the presidential limousine. One of them takes a chunk of skull from a little boy and throws it in the back seat. And only after does the motorcade accelerate after it's clear. Meanwhile, you see, Clint Hill has rushed up to the limousine. She's pushed Jackie, who's climbed out on the trunk, after a big chunk of Jack's skull and brains, back into the back seat, lies across their bodies, peers down into this gaping fist-sized hole in the back of JFK's head, clearly mortal, and turns to his colleagues and gives them a thumbs down. Only after all this sequence of events does the motorcade speed up and drive off. So what we have in the extant version of the Zapruder film is a massively edited film. I estimate that the limo stop, given all the activities I've described, probably lasted 20 or even more seconds. That means, since the film's only 26 seconds and this limo stop was nearly as long as the film, we probably have less than half of the original film available to us today.
So what did happen when this film had been taken with Zapruder? Where did it wind up at that point?
Well, Zapruder would have it developed in Dallas and have Four copies made, although one mysteriously disappeared. It appears to have been sold to H.L. Hunt for $100,000, where Hunt was adamantly opposed to JFK and appears to have been involved in sponsoring the assassination. He would show it to a group of reporters on Saturday morning, but he'd already shown it to one of his colleagues, Irwin Schwartz. And eventually, when the Assassination Records Review Board was created and Schwartz was deposed, he confirmed the blowout to the left rear, that he actually saw it in the film, the original film. But, of course, it's not there now. They had to take all that out because it was such a blatant indication of Secret Service complicity. Now, what happened in the meanwhile is that a copy was taken back to the National Photographic Interpretation Center run by the CIA in Washington, D.C. This is where they process these tiny photographs taken from space. They blow them up in order to study them. Well, if you were going to alter a film, you might want to blow it up and make alterations and then shrink it back down. But this was the original. As you mentioned about the camera, Rick, it takes a 16mm strip of film, shoots down one side called slide A, then you take it out, flip it over, and you shoot the other side, slide B.
Yes.
So if you wanted to plane the whole thing, you gotta cut the film and splice it together.
Yeah, you have to go down the center, yeah.
Yeah, what was taken to the NPIC on Saturday was the original 8mm already split film developed in Dallas. They actually had to have a shop owner open his store in order to obtain an 8mm projector in order to view it. But on Sunday, when a different crew was working at the NPIC, a second film was brought down. It was a 16mm unsplit from the a CIA secret lab in Rochester known as Hawkeye Works, and the substitution was made of the alternate.
Wow. Now, how do you have all of this information down, Pat?
Oh, it's a huge enterprise. Douglas Horn, who was a senior analyst for military records for the Assassination Records Review Board, which was created by an act of Congress in the wake of the tremendous resurgence of interest after the Oliver Stone's film JFK was produced, Congress passed the JFK Records Act that created a five civilian member panel that had the authority to declassify documents and records from every organization, where only the president could override. George Herbert Walker Bush, then president, adamantly opposed it, but it passed anyway. He then refused to appoint the members to the board, which meant there was a delay of 18 months until the Clinton administration could come in and get organized. But Doug has published a five-volume work entitled Inside the ARRB, discussing all of their discoveries and confirming some simply astonishing stuff. I mean, Doug was the first to really uncover that the switch had been made at the NPIC, but he also discovered that when the body was brought to Bethesda, that the pathologist, who'd never dealt with a gunshot victim before, who was Commander James Humes, actually took a cranial saw to the skull of JFK and enlarged the wound, that fist-sized blowout at the back of the head, to make it much, much larger to attempt to create the impression that it had been caused by a shot from behind.
Wow.
We know all this stuff in great detail, Rick. I mean, it's all these years, you know, we've been doing this that have paid off handsomely with even some more revelations I'll explain as we proceed.
You've been, doing yeoman research in a number of areas, and that's your shtick, you know, is to be a researcher and a very excellent one at that. And, you know, the work that you and others have done on this CIA lab, the in Rochester, the connections to Dallas, the Secret Service, the sheriff, and on it goes. This was a well-planned event, in my opinion, well-planned way in advance. And Lee Harvey Oswald happened to be the patsy, apparently.
That's right.
And
he would
be the guy that then Rubenstein, Jack Rubenstein, the nightclub owner from the Chicago mob, just happened to think so dastardly of, because he loved JFK so much that he supposedly shot him there. And you know, all of this looks so scripted, so phony when you look at
the... I don't know if you ever saw the film Once Upon a Time in America, but in the at the end, the principal is given the decision that if he hasn't accomplished a certain task, that he's got to climb in the back of a garbage truck and be ground up. He tries to get a friend he'd betrayed, paid by Robert De Niro, to shoot him by telling him how he betrayed him. But De Niro refuses to do it, and he's got to walk out to the garbage truck. This is the kind of alternative that Jack Ruby was confronted. But believe it or not, listen to this, Rick. We have a recent development that it looks as though the man who actually shot Lee Oswald was a FBI agent by the name of Buchholz, who looked a lot like Jack, and that they used him because he was more reliable than Jack to actually perform the shooting, which itself appears to have been rehearsed in the basement of the police department.
Doesn't it, that one famous scene where they're holding Ruby, and they're holding him, almost thrusting him forward so he could be a target, I've always had questions about that. Didn't that look rather staged?
You mean Oswald, of course, yeah.
Oswald,
they were holding Oswald. They changed him from...
I meant Oswald, yeah.
Yeah, of course you did. They changed him into a dark sweater so you couldn't see where he was shot. You wouldn't be able to see the blood pattern. But yes, it appears to have been rehearsed, and one of the most telling signs is that Will Fritz, the homicide detective who had this great reputation, which he did not deserve, was leading that group and making the transfer, which, by the way, was completely unnecessary and only done in order to provide an opportunity to take him out. Will Fritz never even responds to the shooting behind him. He's trying to pretend to up out.
All right, let's pause right here. Professor James Fetzer, folks, we're talking JFK, the anniversary of the assassination. On today's program, listen up, and we shall return in just a few minutes.
My name is Chris. Since the 1970s, I have been actively making products available that support good health. What makes my juices flow is helping mankind get healthy. Today, I'm going to tell you about a product that will help your juices to flow. I am excited to recommend Dr. Miller's Holy Tea to you. Even if we are eating a clean diet, these impurities are entering our bodies. Holy Tea moves these poisons that are creating havoc with our health out of our bowels. It works on the whole digestive system. The five tasty herbs are combined to provide an amazing detoxifying and healing tea that will rid your body of the pollutants and soothe your digestive tract, and in some cases, help you lose weight. It is critical for our health to move all of the environmental toxins from our bodies. The Holy Tea can do that. As a hydrocolon therapist, remember, with every BM, you're supporting RBN. www.holytea.org. 800-326-2001.
You, your husband, your wife, your children, we all need food. And with dozens of food storage companies buying up airtime all over radio, it's hard for you to know which company you can actually trust. Hey folks, John Stettmiller here. We at RBN understand, which is why I personally searched out a storable food company and one with similar core values to us here at RBN and of course you, the listener. Well, I found such a company. I'd like to introduce you to Numana Food Storage. Numana Food Storage, highly nutritious, GMO-free, contains no aspartame, no high fructose corn syrup, has no chemical preservatives or soy, and Numana Food Storage has a 25-year shelf life. To back up my claims, we've made Numana Food Storage the exclusive food sponsor of RBN. Call 888-597-0775, 888-597-0775. Order online at numanarepublic.com. That's NUMANARepublic.com. Food storage you'll love to eat.
How you doing? This is Jimmy from Zipa, and I want to talk to you a little bit about Black Friday and Cyber Monday. All you people that like to procrastinate, the people that like to go ahead on Black Friday the night before and they camp out waiting for that great deal. Well, hello, newsflash, the deal for Zipa is now. The deal for Zipa is today. We do not reward procrastination. If you want a great price on a Zipa, go to Zipa.com and buy now. If you're going to go ahead and procrastinate, we're going to penalize you for it. What does that mean? That means the price of all the Zipas go up on Black Friday. And you know what happens on Cyber Monday? It goes up again. This is the last opportunity that you will have to get this great price for the Zipa. This is the time now. You wait till Black Friday, the price is going up. Because remember, sleep is priceless. Go to Zipa.com, that's Z-Y-P-P-A-H.com, and get the deal now.
Don't feel like the Lone Ranger. You've got the Radio Avenger on your side.
Hey, Rick Adams. Hey, turn your horse radio on. Rick Adams is on.
Ladies and gentlemen, now Jim Fetzer with us. We're continuing this discussion of Dallas in November 22nd, 1963, particularly focused on the Zapruder film controversy. And once again, you have the floor, Jim.
Oh, thank you, Rick. Yeah, to understand the assassination, you have to go back to Los Angeles and the Democratic Convention in 1960. Jack had invited Stuart Symington of Missouri to be his running mate, but Bobby went by the Johnson suite to issue a pro forma invitation to the majority leader in the Senate, which, of course, he never imagined Johnson would take, but instead was astonished when he leaped on it. LBJ wasn't on either Bobby or Jack's long list, much less their short. But he threatened that if he were not on, he'd expose that Jack had Addison's disease, wasn't expected to live a long, healthy life, that he had had dalliances with beautiful women, some of whom were spies for East Germany, and that if he were not on the ticket, that he would make sure as majority leader he'd bottle up any legislative proposals coming down from the White House, which would be dead on arrival. When one of Johnson's wealthy supporters burst into the Johnson suite cursing and swearing because LBJ was going to help JFK get elected, Bobby Baker took him into a bedroom and explained what they had in mind. He came out all smiles and said he thought that was an excellent plan, Bobby would later announce that JFK would not live out his term and would die a violent death, which, of course, that was precisely the plan they had in mind.
Well, yeah, it's interesting because, Symington was no, shall we say, holy angel himself, in the 50s in the Senate Investigating Committee. He was certainly a thorn in the side of investigation of the Truman administration's and communist infiltration of the government. And so Johnson, Lyndon Johnson, that stellar individual, comes along from Texas. And certainly a few books have been written about his dalliances with some of the boys, apparently some of the pages in the Senate when he was in the Senate. And it's a rather sordid bunch of people we're dealing with to begin with. None of them were what you call above the level of angelhood, None of them were reaching to heaven. So,
Johnson was... A narcissistic individual, a megalomaniac. He had an astounding capacity to read men's weaknesses and strengths. He was a master manipulator. He had a history of seeking power by any means, however ruthless. He had his own personal hitman, Malcolm McWallace, who murdered a dozen people at his request, including one of his own sisters.
Wow. I wouldn't put it past him. And now, where do we go from here now? You mentioned the scene, the staged event at the police headquarters. The police department, the way he was brought in, that is, Oswald, also was a question that we've talked about in the past. It was a rather shady procession all the way to the police department. And then Ruby supposedly comes out of the woodwork. And then we're all witnessing this Jack Ruby supposedly fire the shots that killed Oswald. Now, is all of that basically fake or false as well?
Well, no. I mean, Lee was shot in the police department in the basement during this transfer. I have no doubt about that. And, of course, the assassination, there were gunmen at least six different locations. I've begun to describe some of them. The fact is that when once Lyndon became vice president, he began schmoozing with the Secret Service. That he, working in collaboration with James Jesus Angleton, who is the CIA's legendary counter-espionage expert, was they thought that someone was leaking information to Nikita Khrushchev, so that Angleton prepared ever so slightly different versions of a special document that was top secret and only given to a select number of officials. So that eventually, when they recovered the version that had been received by Khrushchev, he knew that it was transmitted by JFK himself. So they began to plant, both of the Russian premier and the American president were confronted with a military that was extremely hawkish. The American generals were even recommending, a first strike. I mean, Lyman Lemnitzer, the chief of staff, but especially the head of the Air Force. We're hell-bent on taking out Russia.
Yeah, these were the hawks then, and we've got them now again. All right, we'll come back with James Fetcher. We've got plenty of time to talk.
Tell her she can come in if she wants.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
It's time for you to have your own custom smartphone app for your business and pay way less than you can imagine. Introducing the I Can Get To Silent Salesman Mobile Marketing App, a global mobile marketing and communication tool for your business. Go to appsapart.com and learn how you could earn up to $36,351 or more per month just by inviting two people or less into a $14.95 per month program. Go to appsapart.com and be sure to watch the video at the top of the site and listen to the audio message from the CEO near the bottom. This is something you won't want to miss. Go to appsapart.com or call 646-860-9540. That's 646 860-9540.
We are the American Freedom Party. This is the most urgent time in the history of Western civilization. In the year 1900, white people of European descent comprised 35% of the world population. Today it is less than 9% and falling fast. Europe is being overrun with Middle Eastern immigrants, and America's founding stock is rapidly being replaced with third world peoples from around the globe. For the last 50 years, every influential institution in this nation, our schools and universities, our media, our churches and our employers, have promoted policies and principles that teach whites to be ashamed of their great heritage and birthright. We, who in the 1950s, the 1960s, and 1970s were the world's dominant force, are now so afraid of being called racist that we were quailing towards irrelevance and extinction. Join the American Freedom Party today. Reach us at theamericanfreedomparty.us or call us at 701-317-5317. Paid for by the American Freedom Party.
Extendivite, a seven-herb combination of garlic, cayenne, hawthorn, bilberry, ginkgo biloba, valerian, and milk thistle. Extendivite is designed to strengthen the heart and arteries and help the body heal itself. Doctors are not able to explain the improvements they are seeing in their patients' health who are taking Extendivite. People who once needed more pills are now taking less and getting better. Due to the unexplainable improvements in their patients' health, more doctors are calling to order Extendivite for themselves. Help Extendivite make your doctor a believer. Extendivite is available in capsule or liquid form for just $69.95 for a two-month supply. To get started, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Without the right accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested thousands in your arsenal or you own a single trusted firearm, a visit to AROutfitting.com is in order. It's one of the finest online selections of tactical optics and AR parts and add-ons, like EOTech, quick target acquisition with no peripheral loss. Browse the full range of Nikon scopes and binoculars. AROutfitting.com can illuminate your world with Streamlight gun-mounted lights from keychain to large handhelds up to 1,100 lumens. Find some stability with Battenfield tactical bipods. AROutfitting.com has CMMG gun parts, barrels, assemblies, handguards, part kits, and more. Plus Magful clips and magazines. I know I've got you excited, so take a breath. Head to AROutfitting.com. The site's super easy to navigate and features a ton of technical info, including links to manuals. We also welcome vendor and manufacturer inquiries. Remember, if you don't see it, we can get it at AROutfitting.com.
Back, ladies and gentlemen, and we're talking with James Fetzer here, and we're going off in a number of directions that we could go off. I guess we could probably spend 12 hours and just be scratching the surface, James, but nevertheless, we're focusing in on the Zapruder film controversy, because as you know, with all of the post 2000 era technology, all of the internet sites and all of the videos that have been posted, as well as a number of books that are still having been written in the last decade about this, you have quite a bit of a storm of controversy about whether, in fact, there was a conspiracy to kill JFK, or whether, in fact, this single bullet, single gunman traveled all around Dallas, Texas, and managed to kill them. And I think that's been totally discredited now by just about any respectable and honest researcher. And so here we are, then. The questions remain about this key evidence at first that was used in the film, film you referred to. Go ahead.
Well, we have over 60 witnesses to the limit dramatically slowing or coming to a complete halt, Rick, where it's dramatically slowed.
That's what I was going to bring up next. Go ahead.
Where it dramatically slowed as it came to a complete halt. We also have a half a dozen or more have actually seen what appears to be the unedited film They include a foreign a Frenchman by the name of William Raymond. He actually was going to arrange for me to view the other film, as it's called, while I was in Paris, but the owner declined at the last minute. It was viewed by Rich Della Rosa, who ran a JFK site, and in my book, The Great Zapruder Film Hoax. Rich, oddly enough, had the opportunity to see it on three different occasions, so I published the Rich Della Rosa report as an appendix to the book. Greg Burnham, who himself has been a motorcycle escort officer, has seen the film on at least one, possibly more occasions. So we knew the limo stop was in the original film. We have multiple sources on that. It's really beyond any dispute. If you want to know what happened as opposed to the film, you want to go to assassinationresearch.com, which is a website that I created, an online journal for advanced study of the death of JFK with John P. Costella, where John put together all the witness reports. So it's titled What Happened on Elm Street, The Eyewitnesses Speak. And if you want to know what actually happened there, you'll encounter all the witnesses who are talking about the...
Well, how many of these witnesses, how many of them... You're cutting out once in a while here, by the way, just to let you know. There's a clip in your sentences, so just be wary of whatever is going on there. But how many of these witnesses lived much longer to tell the story?
Well, most of those witnesses did live, although you're correct that there are over 100 dead witnesses in the wake of JFK. There are a couple of books about it, one by John Armstrong and Roger Craig, a book called JFK, The Dead Witnesses, that inventories over 100. Richard Belzer has a more recent book in greater detail about JFK, the dead witnesses, where key players were taken out one way or another, you know, an odd crash or a peculiar gunshot accident and so forth. There's a great deal of that. So, you know, the fact of the matter is that the evidence for conspiracy is simply overwhelming. And when you look at the evidence that was used to frame Oswald, I mean, there's a clear indication in the backyard photographs of him holding a Mannlicher Carcano with a pistol belt, holding his revolver, taken allegedly in the backyard. I've actually been in that backyard. Mm-hmm. Has exactly the same face on different four or five different poses with the same shadows. It's an optical impossibility if it was real. When Lee was shown one of these photographs by Will Fritz, he said that was his face pasted on someone else's body, that he knew something about photography and eventually be able to prove it. Well, he was completely right. There's an insert line between the chin and the lower lip. The chin is not Oswald's chin. It's a block chin. Jim Mars and I have done a co-authored article about this entitled Framing the Patsy, the Case of Lee Harvey Oswald, where we both believe it was the chin of Roscoe White, who was an Dallas police officer with ties to the CIA who actually fired a shot in Dealey Plaza from the grassy knoll. But where he was going to hit Jackie, so he pulled his shot, deliberately missed, the bullet wound up in the grass. That was one of the most important conditions on the shooting, that Jackie should not be harmed. In the backyard photographs, you also have the fingertips of the right hand holding these two communist newspapers, The Worker and The Militant. They're cut off. There's the Jack White, who was a legendary student, observed that since those newspapers have known dimensions, we can lay them off, use them as a yardstick, internal yardstick, to determine the height of the individual, who's only about 4'6" when Lee was about 4'10". So he was either too short, or when they introduced the newspapers, they made him a bit too large, which I suspect is exactly what happened. It turned out that a silhouette of the kind you'd need to fake these kind of photographs was found in the desk of a detective for the Dallas Police Department. The Mannlicher Carcano itself was a piece of junk. They did a mail order in order to create a paper trail. It was known as a humanitarian rifle in World War II for never harming anyone on purpose. You could have bought a far superior weapon on a corner store in Dallas without even showing any ID. So this is completely ridiculous. When you get to the Tippit shooting, Actually, it took place about 1:10 in the afternoon. Lee Oswald was already in the Texas Theater buying popcorn when Officer Tippett was shot. The best witness, Aquila Clemens, said it was two men who shot Tippett. That's supported by the physical evidence because the first officer on the scene found four shell casings that had been ejected from automatics, which he initialed, and they were of two different manufacturers, Remington Rand and Western cartridge. Eventually, there'd be a substitute. That made the whole thing ridiculous because Oswald had a revolver, which doesn't automatically eject cartridges, and the shells are quite different. Subsequently, they made an alteration in the evidence and replaced those initial shell casings with revolver shell casings that no longer had the initials. I mean, the deeper you dig into it, the more obvious it becomes that Oswald was just a patsy, which he declared himself to be.
Yeah, yeah. So he was really set up to be killed himself. What about Ruby now? There's a big, big, big to-do by many about Ruby, whether in fact he did die in prison or whether he died in Israel, whether he was sent to Israel or not. What are your thoughts on that?
Oh, he wasn't sent to Israel. Jack Ruby died because he was injected with this rapid-acting cancer vaccine that Judith Berry was working with David Ferry under the supervision of Dr. Mary Sherman. They used to joke about their names, Mary Ferry and Berry. Lee Oswald was assisting them. No, Jack was injected and died from that. He, by the way, was making the point to reporters that this would never have happened if someone else had been vice president. And they pressed him on it. The example was given if Adlai Stevenson had been vice president, it would have happened. And they said, you're talking about the man at the top. And he confirmed, yes, he's talking about the man at the top. We have all kinds of books from these closest associates, including Madeline Duncan Brown, who was the mistress of Lyndon. They began an affair in 1948. She bore him a son, Stephen, in 1950. She wrote a book about it entitled Texas in the Morning, because when they'd have a rendezvous at a hotel, he'd open the windows and just bellow out, God, I love Texas in the morning. Madeline wrote about it. He actually called her the morning of the assassination to tell her that after today, he wasn't going to have to put up with any embarrassment from the Kennedy boys any longer. That was a threat. That was a promise. They had a rendezvous on New Year's Eve in the Driscoll Hotel, during which she confronted him with rumors rampant in Texas at the time that he had been involved personally, since no one stood more to gain more. And Lyndon told her that it was the CIA and the oil boys that decided that Jack had to be taken out. I mean, that's as close to a direct confession as we have in the entire case. There was a social event at the home of Clint Murchison Sr. the night before that was a relatively small event, two or three dozen people, but heavy hitters. Richard Nixon was there. He was thrown out by the local Republican leader who worked in the same bank building where Madeline was advertising executive. J. Edgar Hoover was there. E. Howard Hunt was there. The head of Bell and Hal was there. Root Brown and Root was there. $1 billion to dredge a new port at Cameron Bay, even though Vietnam had many magnificent ports and most certainly didn't need an extra. They had to bring in Nixon. This was a ratification meeting where Lyndon showed up late in the evening, officially unexpectedly, and they disappeared into a boardroom for 15 or 20 minutes. And when it broke up and he strode over toward Madeline, she thought he was going to whisper sweet nothings in his ear. Instead, he said just what he repeated the following day. After tomorrow, I'm not going to have to put up with embarrassment from those Kennedy boys. That's not a threat. That's a promise. They had to bring in Richard Nixon because he was so likely to become president in the near future. They wanted no one in that office who would reopen the investigation.
All right. Now, what about Connally?
Connally was deeply involved in the whole thing. Of course, he'd been Lyndon's campaign chairman in 1960. He knew. If you look at footage from that morning, Connally has a very grim visage. Lyndon and JFK had a huge argument over Lyndon's desire to get Connally out and Ralph Yarborough, the liberal senator who was his nemesis, into the vehicle, but Jack overrode him on the ground that the chief executive of the state should ride with the chief executive of the United States, and it was too late to get the word out to the shooters, so that, in fact, it appears to have been Mack Wallace himself who was firing from the west side of the Triple Underpass, as many as three shots at John Conley in the mistaken belief that it was Ralph Yarborough. Conley himself, of course, always insisted that he had not been hit by the same bullet as Jack. When showed the magic bullet,
yeah.
Robert Shaw, his physician, with the claim that this bullet had gone through both, he said that was most unlikely since he'd removed more lead from John Conley's wrist than was missing from that bullet. After he died, he still had a lead in his left leg, but Nellie refused to allow it to be removed, saying that if they wanted to do that, they should have worked it out with John Conley while he was still alive. Because of his being wounded, and he always insisted he wasn't hit by the same bullet, it obfuscated the politics of the situation, because no one have ever imagined that Lyndon would allow John Conley, you know, his colleague, his crony. They both benefited from all kinds of scams by Billy Saul Estes and others, would have allowed John Conley to be put in harm's way.
You know, we're just, again, we're only scratching the surface of all of the other factors involved here and all of the connections to CIA people, to, you know, the Dallas Boys, as they say, and so on and so forth. But one of the interesting names that you brought up was James Angleton. And I guess he was considered to be, what, the number three man at the CIA, was he?
Yeah. Well, he was revered as a counter-espionage expert. The lack of clarity about the assassination is really followed from the failure to distinguish between three different levels of involvement. The sponsors, the individuals and organizations who wanted Jack out, principally in order to replace his policies with those of Lyndon Johnson, the facilitators who made it all happen, and then the mechanics, the shooters on the ground, of whom, as I mentioned, I've identified six, and their supervisors included, believe it or not, George Herbert Walker Bush, and Edward Lansdale, who is, of course, an Air Force general famous for arranging assassinations all around the world, especially in Vietnam. Lansdale was in Dallas. He walks past these three tramps as they're being escorted to reassure them everything is okay. George Herbert Walker Bush is photographed in Florida in front of the book depository, but he's also arrested coming out of the Dow Techs, where he's been supervising that anti-Castro Cuban who fired the three shots. Those were the only unsilent shots, Rick. None were fired from the book depository, but the acoustics in Dealey Plaza made it impossible to distinguish between those, you know, under ordinary circumstances, between those that were fired from the Dow Techs and what might have been fired from the sixth window. Lee Oswald, actually, and this is the biggest secret of the government about the assassination, was actually standing in the doorway of the book depository while the motorcade passed by. This has been a very disputed issue for a long time, but Harold Weisberg, among the very first students of JFK, in his book, Photographic Whitewash, in 1966, in the last few pages, talks about the fact that Lee was in the doorway. Jim Garrison believed that Lee was in the doorway. Well, Ralph Sinquet, who founded an organization called the Oswald Innocence Campaign, contacted me a few years ago to say that the key to identifying who was in the doorway was the clothing, the height, the weight, the build, and so forth, rather than the face. And when you consider that the alternative to Lee has always been Billy Lovelady, who himself said he was 2 to 3 inches shorter and 20 to 30 pounds heavier, and he couldn't imagine why they would ever be confused, he made a marvelous point. We've done extensive research, especially on the shirt that Lee was wearing. They took it off him when they booked him, so he's only wearing a T-shirt, his undershirt, when he was arrested. But when you match the shirts and compare the shirt with what Billy Lovelady was actually wearing that day, which was a short-sleeve red and white vertically striped shirt, whereas Lee's wearing this rather old, tattered, long-sleeve but richly textured shirt. Which, by the way, Ed Tatro, who's here, told me at an earlier conference, he discussed the shirt with Marina, and she had remembered washing that shirt. Well, not only were we able to establish, but the claim was made that Billy was actually wearing a different shirt, a red and black checkered shirt. It's a ridiculous claim. Judith Baker herself has disproven it by doing a study of the pixelation of the left sleeve, and they don't match at all. the red and black checkered shirt doesn't match at all, with the, whereas Lee's shirt does match very closely with the man in the doorway. But now, just at this conference yesterday, Larry Rivera, who's been doing absolutely cutting-edge research, I mentioned him already, in relation to the recovery of the interviews with the motorcycle patrolmen, so we all know all the activities they undertook, including Jackson motoring up on the grass, and we do have photographs where you can actually see the bicycle marks on the grassy knoll from his motoring up and Hargis dismounting and the five Secret Service agents surrounding the limousine. Larry has done the most brilliant work on finding photographs that are suitable of Billy Lovelady and Lee Oswald and creating GIFs, where you can see the face coming in the image in this famous photograph taken by James Ike Alchins. That got captured Lee in the doorway, and there is no doubt about it. He gave a presentation yesterday that was so technically sophisticated, so thorough and scientifically conducted, Rick, that there's absolutely no question whatsoever that Lee Oswald was in the doorway during the motorcade, which means he was not only not the lone gunman, he could not have even been one of the shooters.
One of the gunmen, one of the shooters, yeah. Okay, we'll come back, James. Take a breath now. Take a little respite here, and we'll come back, folks. We will have Jim with us for another, probably another 25 minutes or so. We'll take a call or two as well.
You, your husband, your wife, your children, we all need food. And with dozens of food storage companies buying up airtime all over radio, it's hard for you to know which company you can actually trust. Hey folks, John Stettmiller here. We at RBN understand, which is why I personally searched out a storable food company and one with similar core values to us here at RBN and of course you, the listener. Well, I found such a company. I'd like to introduce you to Numana Food Storage. Numana Food Storage, highly nutritious, GMO-free, contains no aspartame, no high fructose corn syrup, has no chemical preservatives or soy, and Numana Food Storage has a 25-year shelf life. To back up my claims, we've made Numana Food Storage the exclusive food sponsor of RBN. Call 888-597-0775, 888-597-0775. Order online at numanarepublic.com. That's NUMANARepublic.com. Food storage you'll love to eat.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Only a fool would go to a plumber for brain surgery. But otherwise intelligent people use internet searches to find such gems as Lee Harvey Oswald killed JFK with three shots from the rear and one shot from the front. They get similar financial guidance when they are investigating cryptocurrencies. RBN listeners know that American currency has not been lawful money for nearly 50 years, since the thieves at the Fed stole the silver out of the coins and began reneging on redeemable notes in 1968. Now that the dollar has just about inflated totally away and banks want reverse interest to keep your books, the high-tech world has brought you an alternative. What if you could buy, sell, and trade with fellow business people from your home with zero bank fees? If you believe banking tyranny must end, then join the digital currency movement now. Call investigative journalist Pat Shannon at 601-212-0911.
Rick Adams is back.
Radio Avenger, the Paul Revere of talk radio.
All right, folks, we're back on this special anniversary broadcast of the JFK murder in Dallas, and talking with Jim Fetzer here, and we're really exploring a lot of options, and I'm going to go to the phones, Jim, in just a moment or so. But let me ask you this, and this has to do with Jack Kennedy had, as you know, a number of failures in the first 3 years of his administration. We think of the Cuban Missile Crisis, purportedly. We also think of the most recent one to date was the Bay of Pigs fiasco was the first, I believe. And what took place there, and the controversy about JFK, the Berlin Wall remarks, and so on and so forth. Things were not looking too good for JFK in terms of his, if you will, his foreign policy adventurism. And we know that he had a number of people surrounding him, CFR, Trilat people, pre-Trilat people at that time, who were staffing his administration. And quite frankly, it looks as if he had some disagreements with many of them, particularly on the Middle East and Israel, and his conversations apparently with Ben-Gurion that ended abruptly prior to the assassination. What he, I understand, was attempting to do following the Bay of Pigs fiasco was to dress down the CIA, Murder Incorporated, so to speak. And that was his main target from everything that I have seen in writing. He's very concerned about them being out of control. And he announced his plans. Do you have any comment along those lines at all in your perspective?
Well, I mentioned the distinction between the sponsors, the facilitators, and the mechanics. The sponsors included the CIA, because Jack was threatening to shatter it into 1,000 pieces. Right. It included the Joint Chiefs, because he had not invaded Cuba, contrary to the unanimous recommendation. He'd signed an above ground test ban treaty, contrary to the unanimous opposition. Now he's pulling our forces out of Cuba, where they believed a stand had to be taken against the expansion of international godless communism. Fidel Castro Cubans were upset because they believed he betrayed them at the Bay of Pigs. The mafia wanted him out because Bobby was cracking down on organized crime for the first time in history, bringing more indictments and convictions and really doing serious damage. Eastern establishment surrounding the Fed was upset with Jack because he'd already instructed the Department of Treasury to print hundreds of millions in United States notes on the ground that it was absurd to pay a consortium of private banks interest for printing the currency of the United States. The Texas oilmen were upset because it was threatening to cut their oil depletion allowance. And as you observe, he was at loggerheads with David Ben-Gurion, who wanted Israel to develop nuclear weapons, which JFK opposed. He was working for peace on multiple levels. He was even interested in normalizing relations with Cuba already. He had a representative in Paris, as did Fidel Castro on the day of the assassination. I think Fidel and Nikita were the two most distressed statesmen in the world when they discovered heard the news of the assassination, because JFK really truly was working diplomatic angles to make this a better, more peaceful world. Frankly, he was simply light years ahead of those who were surrounding him, especially the Joint Chiefs, who had only the dimmest understanding of history and its forces.
All right, it's a midway break, and we're going to come right back, and I'm going to bring up a few calls, folks. So you stay with us. Jim, you stay with us, too, and we'll be right back, folks, on this special edition.
Extendivite is more than just a heart tonic. Most basic diseases are caused by yeast in the gut and metals in the liver, and we all have a bit of both.
The garlic and extendivite has a yeast-killing effect in the gut while also helping the sulfur enzyme in the liver get rid of the metals. Extendivite just may improve your overall health. Products like extendivite are the only way we are going to get our society healthy. And if you're waiting for the government and pharmaceutical care to solve your health problems, you're going to have a long, disappointing wait, I think. Extendivite is a complete formula for extended life in the new millennium. 80 can be the new 60. Extendivite is available in capsule or liquid form for just $69.95 for a two-month supply. To get started, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.